Welcome to an episode of ESPN's Unlapped, where we don't even like podcasts here. Katie George joined by Nate Saunders and Lawrence Edmondson, who's still in Asia post Singapore and Japan. My new life mission, gentlemen, is getting Max Verstappen on this pod after his comments in the holding room in Suzuka after he won the Japanese Grand Prix. Do you like our chances since we've already had Christian Horner, friend of the pod?
Yeah, good luck with that. Turns out Max has no interest in podcasts whatsoever. I don't suppose that means that he wouldn't go on one if he was coerced into it by Red Bull's comms team. So we'll have to work on that. But I don't think he'll be listening back to it, put it that way, if he comes on. I think he's missing out. You know, I think there's a lot of great podcasts out there, I'd like to think this one included. By not listening to any of them, having no interest outside of whatever, yeah, he does in F1, it's a little bit strange to me. But anyway, it's not for everyone, I guess.
His words were, they make me fall asleep, weren't they? So I think for our show, I mean, I'd like to think that's not the case for us, but we'll have to see. The only way to find out is to get him on the pod, isn't it? So
true. Not a surprising admission from Max Verstappen. I definitely would have said I had that on my bingo card for the 2023 season. But we will get to work on that. We obviously know the PR team. So now, as I told you, I've dedicated myself. It'll happen this year, or it might happen next year. But by God, we are getting him on ESPN's Unlapped. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, like this video, leave us a comment, and don't forget to subscribe to ESPN for more F1 content. And if you're listening, hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. It means a great deal to us. Let's dive right in, shall we? Max Verstappen, of course, bounced back with an absolutely dominant performance in Suzuka the entire weekend. Red Bull clinched their second consecutive Constructors' Championship. So congratulations to Christian Horner and the entire Red Bull team on a phenomenal year, I think we can all say. And even with 6 races left in the season, it's been historic. It's been so dominant. But is this the most dominant season you guys have seen? Lawrence, I'll start with you first, from an F1 team in recent years.
Yeah, because I was 2 years old when McLaren went and won all but one race in 1988. So in terms of what I've seen and I can remember, they still have to finish it and close it out, because otherwise some of the Mercedes seasons are up there. I think Mercedes, missed out on two wins in 2019, I want to say. I'll have to double check that anyway. There were a few years where Mercedes got pretty close to it. But I feel like this has been something else from Red Bull. And, you know, really Singapore was just such a one-off. And there were a few doubts about what Red Bull were doing and how they were doing it, and whether a clarification of the regulations in Singapore might have thrown Red Bull off their stride. And that was why they were slow in Singapore. But that's clearly not the case. Max went out in Japan, had this point to prove, said to Christian Horner, before the race, they went and played like paddle tennis in Singapore after the race, kind of let off some steam. And he said while he was playing tennis with Christian afterwards in Singapore, that he wanted to win by 20 seconds. And he was like 0.6 seconds shy of that. And that was apparently because the blue flag got waved and a driver didn't get out of the way on the final lap. So, that kind of dominance, that ability to go from a race where they were absolutely nowhere and go back to a regular track and win by 20 seconds is massive. I think this is probably going to be the most dominant season I've ever seen.
Would you concur, Nate? Because they're the first team in Formula One history to clinch the constructors with 6 races left on the calendar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd echo everything Lawrence said, and I think those Mercedes seasons that, you know, and some of the Schumacher seasons, when you look back at those in the 2000s, even then it seemed like there were possibilities race to race that it was going to be difficult for Schumacher or for Hamilton to win the race. This season, Verstappen especially, has just been so good that, take Singapore out of the equation, most of the races you've got to the Sunday, if he's got into the turn one ahead, or he's been even second, third, fourth at turn one, you've pretty much assumed he's going to win the race. So can't remember many seasons like it. Singapore was great just from a point of view of just injecting some life back into it. But Max deserves huge credit. So do Red Bull. It's been amazing. And to be honest with you, in a weird way, it's kind of impressive because they've delivered the season we thought they would when we saw the first qualifying session in Bahrain, and they were so far ahead. George Russell came out to the media after that and said they're going to win every race this season. He was very, very nearly right on that, or at least as it stands. And that's quite a big feat, because often in the first race, you know, you can see a team very, very far ahead. They look dominant. And then, you know, it turns out, it, you know, all the other teams kind of catch up very quickly, and Red Bull just haven't let other teams do that. They've been fantastic. Mm. So yeah, it's got to be. I mean, maybe I'm missing an obvious example, but like Lawrence said, there's no really obvious comparison.
Max completed his 9th hat trick of his F1 career with his pole position in qualifying, fastest lap, and then of course the race win. Now he could clinch his 3rd straight drivers' championship at Qatar. With Qatar being a sprint weekend, all he has to do is finish 6th in the sprint and he'll clinch it. Is it weird to think that he could clinch the drivers' championship on a Saturday before even going into the race, Nate?
Very weird. I was thinking about this, when we're wrapping up the coverage of Japan. Every time we've seen a champion, whether it's Abu Dhabi 21, whether it was some of Lewis's wins when he would win in Austin or Mexico, the build-up would be to the Sunday. You know, everything would build up to the Sunday, even if it's, Lewis needs to finish 5th, or, you know, obviously Abu Dhabi, it went to the wire, but, you know, there's other occasions when drivers have clinched early. You're still, all the build-up goes to that Sunday, and it'll be weird if we get to Saturday, he wins it. Obviously, Red Bull, I assume, will have some kind of celebration. I'm not sure, you know, if Qatar's the best place to kind of let loose and you know, have that celebration as you might in other places. But then we'll all wake up in the morning and there'll still be a Grand Prix to win and a Grand Prix to race. And I assume that Max will still want to win that, regardless of whether he's won the championship or not. So it'll be a weird one. And I mean, to be honest with you, I hope he wins it on the Sunday because I like the Grand Prix being the main event from the weekend. But I think in a weird way, it would be very fitting for Max to win it on a Saturday. His dominance has been such that he wins it in a way that no one else has ever won it before, you know, on a Saturday in a fairly new format. I think it would just fit with the season we've seen. So it will definitely be weird. It might make Sunday easier from a journalistic point of view. I don't know. but I mean, we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, Max just doesn't win championships in normal ways, does he? I mean,
no,
2021 yeah. with Michael Fair. Massey involved and all that went on after that. We didn't know in the immediate aftermath whether he really was champion or not, whether Mercedes would protest, how far that would go, when we would find out. And then obviously last year in Japan, he crossed the line and he wasn't aware he'd won the championship. His team was still checking if he was champion because we'd had a shortened race that, if under one interpretation of the regulations, meant only a certain amount of percentage of points would be handed out. And actually under the correct interpretation of the regulations, the full points were handed out and therefore he had won it. So if he does it on a Saturday, I think it's just in keeping with his way of winning titles, which is just, there's always something a little bit peculiar about it. But I think it will be odd. And, well, you know, I think this is the risk that F1 always had if they included sprint races. But I suppose the other way to look at it is that I don't think anyone has been in doubt that he would be world champion since May, more or less. You know, I mean, as soon as he started to just beat Perez at every single race, it was, you know, after Miami and then into June and July, it just became so obvious that he was going to be champion. I guess it doesn't really matter where mathematically it gets sealed, but it is a bit odd. But yeah, I guess that's just the way Max goes about winning championships.
I'm just trying to work out how he might win it next year, assuming he did. You know, would he reverse over the line at one of the races, you know, spin at, like, you know, do, like, I don't know, like hit the wall as he crosses the line or something. Like, there's got to be, if he wins it on the Saturday, I think that'll be the theme of Verstappen. It's like, he wins championships, they're memorable, but they're also very, very quirky and weird in how he does them. I think it'll be that's a great legacy to have, I think.
No doubt about it. Another legacy that's not so great to have is when you're his teammate on the opposite side of the garage and your name is Sergio Perez. At the moment, not saying that he's not going to have a phenomenal legacy when he looks back on his F1 career, but as it stands right now, guys, back-to-back tough races for Sergio Perez. Lawrence, what was it like on the ground in Japan watching that day unfold for him?
Yeah, it's not nice actually to see a driver who we've seen achieve great results in his career, often for smaller teams, and then just to go through, you know, what happened in Japan, and really the die was cast in qualifying when he qualified 5th, put himself in that midfield. Suzuka it's a funny grid because it's on quite a slope downhill, so it's quite hard to get the start absolutely spot on, and then it's narrow as well. You know, as soon as you get past the pit lane exit, it all narrows down into a very fast first corner, and he had Ferraris on one side who were pushing him across, and he had Lewis Hamilton on the other who ended up on the grass, And he actually came out worse. You know, he lost a bit of front wing. So as soon as that happened, he was in trouble. He was always going backwards on a circuit where, you know, we do see exciting racing, I feel, but it's not easy to overtake, even in a Red Bull. So from that point onwards, it felt like he was just pushing way over the edge, trying to make up for what had gone wrong on Saturday and then Sunday. But this is, you know, it just feels like the same each weekend for Perez at the moment. The guy, whether he can't catch a break, that's a, you know, probably a kind way to look at it. But I think a much more realistic way to look at it is that he is just massively underperforming. You know, that Red Bull was capable of taking pole position by half a second to Oscar Piastri. In the first sector alone, Max Verstappen was 0.2 up on Piastri. You know, if you look at the gaps to some of the other teams, like the Mercedes and the Ferraris, in that first sector, it was about 0.6 to 0.7 to 0.8. That's how quick that was. You know, that would be a massive margin around a single lap at any racetrack. But Perez couldn't find it. He could not hook together those early corners of the lap, or really any of the corners, in the way that Verstappen did. And I just don't really know where he goes from here, other than just trying to see out the season and starting again afresh in 2024. But then he's going to have the pressure of a, you know, contract year and the rest of it. So, yeah, I don't know where he goes. But at the moment, it seems to be getting worse rather than better.
I would agree. And I don't know, Nate, if it's the pressure that's mounting. Obviously, Lewis Hamilton is clicking at his heels right now for P2 in the constructor in the Drivers' Championship. I don't know if it's pressing too much because of who your teammate is, or is it just a confidence issue because you've put together, you know, poor qualifying results, poor results on Sundays, a combination of all of the above? Like, can you pinpoint what it is at this point?
A combination of all the above would be a fair way to look at it. And I think often those things go hand in hand. You know, with Perez, clearly the confidence is lacking. I mean, you can see that, you know, when Lawrence and I go to the media sessions with Perez in, you know, you don't find the Perez that we used to talk to, you know, when it was Racing Point or Force India. You know, he's a lot more reserved. He, you know, I don't think he really enjoys talking to the media in the way that he used to, because the tone of the questions is very similar. It's, you know, why are you struggling? Max is winning. Yeah. You know, it's very easy to be on the back foot and be defensive about that if you're in that situation. And I mean, just on the point of confidence, often what you find when a driver is lacking confidence is they then start to overdrive. They overcompensate. They push too hard. Lawrence was like spot on with that about the car. You know, Perez probably could have sat, waited for the race to come to him. We've seen one of the great things about Max, and I think that this trait of his actually gets overlooked because he's out in front so much, but Max has become a very, very patient driver. You know, he knows the car he has underneath him, and we saw it in Monza. You know, he did have a fight with Sainz, but he waited for the situation to come to him, eventually got past Sainz, and then disappeared into the distance. With Perez, I think there's an urgency to prove what he can do. And that, I mean, that tangle with Magnussen, Perez in that Red Bull there's no reason he should be in that situation with a car that is probably 8th, 9th, or 10th fastest, you know, given the race that you're at. There's absolutely no reason he should be in that situation. I thought it was actually, I wonder how much of it was obviously 24, 48 hours before the race, we found out that Ricciardo and Tsunoda were going to be driving for AlphaTauri. And we've known that for a long time, but the confirmation that those two guys are staying there, obviously, you know, it ends any speculation that Red Bull might at the last minute pull the rug from under Perez's feet and say, actually, we're going to put Ricciardo in there, which I don't really think has been a serious threat, but the speculation has been there and the prospect has been there. And that must have weighed on his mind a bit. I don't know whether them taking that away kind of almost put him into a place where it's now I just need to perform. And actually, you know, the weight of that expectation is just so great that, you know, we saw the race, we saw him have the race that he did have. And the weird thing with Perez is it felt like, you know, either side of the summer break, it was like, okay, it feels like he's getting on top of whatever these issues are. And then suddenly it just has fallen apart again. So I'm not sure what is going on with Perez at the moment. But if you look at the grid, there's a few drivers where you're like, these guys need an off season right now just to get away. You know, I'd put Stroll in there, I'd put Sargeant in there, and I'd put Perez in there as well. You know, those three guys, when you look at how they're performing, but Sargeant's a rookie, you know, Stroll's up against Fernando Alonso and, you know, he's in his own situation. But Perez is in the best car on the grid. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of things going on there. And the problem he's got as well is that Max just keeps getting better and better. Max is just, we see no signs of mistakes from him. You know, even Singapore when Red Bull were down, you know, Max still came through the field quite well at the end. I think he was fifth there. So even when Max isn't having great weekends, he's still getting the most out of the car. So it must be just devastating from a confidence point of view. And I agree with Lawrence. It's quite painful to watch because, you know, you don't want to see drivers in that situation, especially when you know how good Perez has been previously in Formula One.
You're not allowed to jump ahead on the rundown. I've got the doghouse listed, and you just told us
it's a teaser.
It was a teaser. Yes.
Doghouse teaser. Apologies. Sorry, Casey. I'll let you. You're a much better host than I'd ever be, so I'll never do that again.
We'll get there. So follow along with us. But a couple more questions here. Certainly a forgettable weekend for Sergio Perez. A unforgettable weekend for McLaren with a double podium in Suzuka. Lando had an electric start, gave Max a real battle there outside of turn one. It was obviously a strong weekend from Oscar Piastri after his extension news. I just think back to the way that we were discussing this team after Bahrain. Have you ever seen kind of just this turnaround, this changing of gears? I mean, who do we attribute the success to? Is it a certain person? Is it the team overall, Lawrence? Can you remember a team that's been able to bounce back like McLaren has this season?
It is rare. I can't think of a team that's gone from essentially back of the grid at the opening race to double podiums later in the season. I think it shows a number of things. One is just how tight the field is in Formula One at the moment. We haven't had that for a long time. I know we've got Red Bull a long way ahead. Well, I say Red Bull, really Max Verstappen a long way ahead, but the rest of the teams are very close. And it's been the case now under this kind of cost cap environment as well, where if you bring a big update and it works really well, you're going to make huge gains, like significant gains. And the other thing about the Suzuka result is that Suzuka is basically a track that is perfect for the McLaren. We know the McLaren is very good in high-speed corners. It has been since they brought upgrades to the car in Austria and Silverstone, which is really where we saw this big turnaround begin. And Suzuka is just a series of high-speed corner after high-speed corner after high-speed corner after high-speed corner. And in Silverstone, you know, the really fast stuff, the McLaren was actually faster than the Red Bull. So this was always a track that was going to suit them now that they have got the car into the position where they have. But that is massively impressive. And yeah, I mean, who do you put it down to? Well, you know, at the start of the year, they knew they had under-delivered essentially over the winter with what they'd done with the development of their car. And they were concerned about it going into the first race, rightly so. But they said, look, you know, by the end of the year, our target is to be the fourth best team. Now, they've got Aston Martin in their sights to become fourth in the Constructors' Championship, which would be very impressive. But they were talking about being the fourth fastest team. And actually right now, on certain tracks, certainly on the like Suzuka, you know, they went well in Singapore as well, of course. Norris finished second to Carlos Sainz there. So, you know, it is now starting to be across a range of circuits that they're quick. You know, there's a very strong argument to say that they've absolutely got the second fastest car at the moment going into the final few races. And Lando Norris, I think, since the upgrade arrived, certainly, around kind of Austria, Silverstone time, he's second in the amount of points he scored only to Max Verstappen. So that's the level they're up now, which I think is a bit of a surprise. But where should the credit go? Well, you know, I think Andrea Stella, who became team principal at the start of this year, that was a big role to take on. Andrea Seidel went from McLaren. He was, you know, very well respected at McLaren, but decided to go and head up Sauber, which is going to become Audi in 2026. And so Stella took over, and he was very kind of well-respected in the team. But having been to a few media sessions with him now, you know, he's really very, very charismatic. Like, he's really a kind of guy that you would definitely get behind and you'd work. And then you'd believe it as well when he says stuff. And then to be able to turn everything that he was saying into actual results on track, that is very, very impressive. And there's a few big pieces that are still slotting into place at McLaren. You know, they've got Rob Marshall coming over from Red Bull. They've got Nate, I've forgotten his name, the guy from Ferrari.
Sanchez.
David Sanchez. Yeah, from Ferrari. And so by the time all of that gets into place, you know, it's only strengthening this team going forward. My only concern is that, you know, they're looking very good under this regulation set. We get to 2026. And what happens when they don't have their own engine supply, and they're probably still relying on Mercedes going forward as a customer team. But in the meantime, I think they've done a remarkable job.
They truly have. I mean, get this. In the first eight races of the season, the two drivers combined for 17 points, an average of 2.1 points per race. The last eight races that they've competed in, 145 points, an average of 18.1 a race. I mean, it's a night and day difference. Nate, when you look at Norris and Piastri, is this driver pair maybe the strongest on the grid moving forward into the future?
Super exciting pairing. I mean, I think I wouldn't say they're quite the most exciting. I mean, they're definitely the most exciting. Whether they're the strongest pairing just yet, I think we need to see them win some races. You know, if you look at, you know, I think we always say on this, I think if you look pound for pound, Mercedes, you've obviously got Lewis there, but they've also got George, who's won a race, has taken pole. I mean, Lando, you know, Lando's just waiting. I think he's had the same amount of second positions this year as Perez, which is remarkable for all kinds of reasons. It's remarkable for Norris. It's also remarkable that Perez has allowed that situation to happen. So he's just, we know he's going to win a race at some point. And Piastri, I mean, he has come in. I've been so impressed with him. You know, I mean, if you compare what Ricciardo was doing last year alongside Norris, how he was struggling, Piastri's come in and he's one of these guys. He's a bit like Verstappen in the way he talks about racing, in that he just doesn't really seem that fazed by the, you know, kind of the hype and the praise around him. And I think that's always very, very telling when you see that. So I think give him a win or two each, and I'd probably revise that about Mercedes because, I mean, Lewis's experience is always going to be huge, but in terms of just the excitement you've got there, the fact that Piastri has also signed up until 2026, past that regulation change that Lawrence mentioned, is a huge ringing endorsement of the team. But also it shows, you know, they've got that stability. I think Norris is there till 2026 at least. So, yeah, I think if you're McLaren right now, you know, in the space of 6 months, it's gone from doom and gloom to, you know, an incredibly good situation. And I definitely, you mentioned earlier about having certain things on your bingo card, Katie. McLaren turning the season around was not on mine. So I have to, you know, I have to, you know, eat humble pie on that one, because I don't think even them saying they were going to be the fourth fastest, it just seemed so absurd at the start of the year because they were so far behind everyone. But yeah, no, they've done a fantastic job.
Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You mentioned Mercedes. So P2 and a lot of money is still up for grabs in the constructors, with Ferrari and Mercedes battling it out. In the last four races, Ferrari has outscored Mercedes by 36 points. Ferrari outscored them again in Suzuka 20-16. Lawrence, what did you make of the decision and how the race ended for Mercedes team orders to swap those cars?
Yeah, it was a slightly controversial one. I mean, George, I'm not sure realistically would have been outweighed. He couldn't hold off Sainz, obviously, once. But I'm not even sure it would have worked out well for them if they'd tried to use Lewis as a buffer in between. So to protect the most amount of team points against a rival, I think they probably did have to swap the cars. Whether then Lewis could have given George a bit of DRS, as George pointed out immediately, and as Carlos did to great effect in Singapore, maybe there could have been a bit more cooperation there. But even so, he did give George DRS down the straight, and Sainz still got past. So, yeah, it's a battle that's really heating up, and I think it's very good news for Ferrari, because they've really unlocked something with that car, and basically just making it a basically a happier car for the drivers to live with, and seems to ride curbs better than it used to. So there's a lot of positive things, even on high downforce circuit like Suzuka, where you wouldn't normally expect it to be very good based on what we've seen at other tracks. It was still relatively competitive behind the McLaren, but ahead of the Mercedes. So that's a big step for them. And then Mercedes, I think they're now in a position where so much is going towards next year, as it should do, really. But they may end up compromising themselves this year and perhaps losing that second place in the championship. But if, you know, if it means extra development time on next year's car, of course, I think all development from now in terms of starting projects is absolutely on next year's car. But if it means they've changed that earlier in the year than perhaps Ferrari did, and you know, they're just now running out of steam a bit, well, you know, that's part of Formula One. And really, for a Mercedes team to be, you know, third this year, but then have a better start next year, as long as that happens, because they're talking about completely changing the car in many aspects, then I think that's the best overall decision. But it's got to be tight. And, you know, what we're also seeing from Ferrari is fewer mistakes in general, just fewer operational errors, better strategies. And I think actually what we're seeing now is probably more of what that car has had, the potential it's had throughout the year, but more focused now on actually getting results. So, well done to Ferrari. And I think if they just nail the end of the season, they can beat Mercedes on pace.
It's not as drastic of a turnaround, obviously, as McLaren, based on where McLaren was starting the season. But still, I think Ferrari deserves a little tip of the cap based on the turnaround that we've seen mid-season here, based on the performances as of late. Okay, doghouse time. After a very entertaining race, Nate, at Suzuka, now that you've already kind of told us who you're not thrilled with, who would you put in the doghouse at this point of the season?
Well, I teased three names earlier, and it's a difficult choice between those three drivers. I don't know if Lawrence had a plan of action here, or if you did, Katie, but I'm going to put Perez in there. I just think, you know, for all the reasons we spoke about, best car, one of his worst weekends of the season, and contrasted to Max. And also the reason why as well was Max won the championship, and nobody, I don't think, watching thought, oh, well done, Verstappen and Perez won the Constructors' Championship for Red Bull. Your first thought was, well, I mean, Max has basically won that for the team. And that was telling of that race for Perez, but also just the season in general. So I'd put Perez in there. But it's, I mean, I think it's going to be a crowded doghouse this weekend.
Lawrence?
Yeah. I think Perez is a very safe shout, and I completely agree with that. But Lance Stroll as well, at the moment, just underperforming to a level that is kind of surprising, kind of worrying. It's got people questioning his motivation. And, you know, I don't really like that if you know, it's not warranted. But, yeah, you've got to ask questions. I mean, he scored 3 points in the last seven races. And, look, I know the Aston Martin has, you know, his performance is not anywhere near as good as it was at the start of the year. But Fernando is still dragging results out of it, still scoring points here and there. And, Stroll is just nowhere in comparison, you know, Q1 knockouts. So, yeah, I would put Stroll down there. You know, he insists, the team insists that he's still motivated, wants to carry on. But, yeah, we'll have to see how that one pans out. And also, you know, I'm not the first person to point this out, but if Aston Martin do have these ambitions as high as they said, you know, in terms of going for championships and everything else, there will come a point where not having Stroll performing on that level is going to harm them. And, you know, potentially even in the battle with McLaren, if, you know, if McLaren continue to perform well at the remaining races, then that fourth place is under threat. And we would not have said that, you know, early in the year when Aston Martin were running high in second. So, yeah, it's a big missing piece in that team at the moment. And I think he needs to, again, another driver who obviously needs a bit of a reset to get back to the level that he can be at.
And just quickly, Katie, before we jump in, you can see as well the effect it's having on Fernando. I think we're starting to see he's frustrated at the car, but I think he has also been carrying that team all season. And that was fine when the results were better, but now that things are going worse, we're just seeing a bit more of a fiery Fernando. And I think that, you know, at the start of the year, he was kind of on the party line, wasn't he, about Lance and stuff. And the fact that Fernando's now getting more and more frustrated, I think there's a lot more going on with that team than we're seeing at the moment from the outside.
Yeah, you would imagine resentment starts to creep in of, hey, I'm doing my job, I need you to do yours, kind of help me out essentially. I hate to do this because I'm such an Alex Albon fan, but I'm just going to throw all of Williams into that doghouse if there's still some room. Two DNFs. And I say that out of like a loving place of like I was hoping for more because I've grown accustomed to more with Alex Albon. So I'm going to throw Williams in the doghouse. Are we okay with that? Do you guys have the room?
I think Sargent deserves to be in there. I think Albon.
I know maybe, his was unlucky. He was squeezed, been, wrong place, wrong time. But still,
but I get what you mean. If you're looking at the team, then but the team is it's got to be painted in an American flag if the team's in there because Sargent's the one who's driven them in there. I think.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, he has. He's been the last three races. He's been dreadful. I mean, the Sargent we've seen the last three races. You know, on that sample, you wouldn't say he deserves to be in Formula One based on that. You know, Williams insists he's getting better, but I don't think I'm seeing it.
But I would also say I think it's harsh to put Williams in there because Williams are a team that we've got used to being 10th in the Constructors' Championship, sometimes on 0 points. They're 7th for the moment. And, you know, they're quite, you know, they look like they're going to finish 7th as well, quite comfortably ahead of Haas. And I think it goes to show just how good a season they've had that our expectations have changed so much.
I know that's why I put them in there.
It's like a backhanded compliment. You know, they've done so well recently that when they go to a track and, you know, and they have the issues that they have and a double DNF, then we're a little bit disappointed. But yeah, I do agree with Nate that Sargent's form is not where it should be. And also the fact that he doesn't already have a contract secure for next year, despite there being very few options, you know, that shout out as people, you know, who would be an obvious replacement. That says a lot as well. And, you know, it seems like Williams is still waiting to see if he can hit the performance that they want him to hit before the end of the year, before they make a final decision on that one.
I definitely want to touch on Jess Hawkins, but because we're speaking about Williams at this moment, can't believe I'm giving a shout out to Bass Pro 24 Chevy on Reddit, but he has run the numbers. And if you're unfamiliar with the Destructors standings, it's a running total of all damage the drivers have done for their respective teams. And right now, because we were mentioning America's own Logan Sargent, he currently has the lead with $1.3 million in the Destructors Championship. Do you think that he will be able to bring home the championship this season?
Well, this is tremendous work. I mean, this is some of the best stuff I've ever seen on F1 Reddit. And again, the three guys we were just talking about, Sargent, Stroll, Perez, on this Destructors Championship are leading the way. But I'm going to back Sargent. You know, I think Sargent's looking good right now. You know, he's destructing a lot of cars. He's really got his head in that place. So I'd say Sargent to win it, but Stroll's right there behind him. You know, so yeah, Stroll might win something this year.
Yeah, and Stroll's from this like layout we have now. Stroll's accident in Singapore, I don't think it is added in his grand total. So that's going to make it pretty close if that one gets factored in, because I think that was a chassis that got written off. Suddenly they were building up a new chassis in Singapore before he decided not to race. So yeah, this must make such horrible reading if you're a Formula One driver and you come across it, like how much you have cost your team. Because don't forget, I mean, the figure there, I don't know how accurate this is. That, you know, clearly the guy's, he's done a very good job. He's taken stock prices from the internet of how much a front wing would usually cost for a team and that kind of stuff. And a lot of that is based on the raw materials and manufacturing time. But 3.9 million is what Logan Sargent's total is at the moment, dollars, that is. And, you know, that's 3.9 million that isn't going to get spent on next year's car out of a budget cap of 135. And, you know, once it starts creeping up, it becomes a very serious thing, and you know, teams will have to redistribute budget eventually to do it. And the other thing with Logan at the moment, which maybe accounts for a bit of his performance, is that he's not running the same spec as Alex Albon, because they literally do not have the parts to put on both cars, because Logan's destroyed so many of them. And naturally they have put them more on Alex's car because he's a better chance of scoring points. But yeah, when you get to a point where the team either no longer has the parts because they've just been destroyed, or no longer trust the driver to put the new parts on, you know, that says a lot, and that's a difficult position to be in. So maybe accounts for some of the gap that we sometimes see to Albon in qualifying and so on, but not a good position to be in.
And look who the bottom three are. Just, I know this isn't gospel, this list, but bringing up the rear in the Deconstructors Championship, a certain Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, Max Verstappen. Above them, Valtteri Bottas, who's won, what, 8 races. You've got Norris. You've also got Russell up there. And then you've got Magnussen and Hulkenberg in that top 10. So
there's a correlation. So
often, yeah, exactly. So often we hear about experience. And in the case of Haas, you know, moving away from Mick Schumacher last year, Mick would have been a contender for, you know, Deconstructors Champion of the Year last season. It just shows you, you know, the importance of having drivers that you can trust to not wreck the car in this cost cap era is huge. And actually seeing it, you know, the numbers on here, we were just saying before we started recording, weren't we, that it'd be great to actually get these numbers, you know, confirmed. But, you know, based on the estimations you got there, it's actually quite an interesting and quite a telling list. So I don't know how many of the drivers are going to willingly talk about it, but I might ask a few questions in Qatar, see if those guys have seen the list or not.
It is fascinating. And Lawrence, to your point, Mick Schumacher, he did take home the Deconstructors Championship in 2022 with nearly $4 million in damages. And in 2021 with nearly $5 million in damages. And we know that's in part the reason why Haas decided to move in a different direction, because they couldn't foot the bill of constant damage and constant wreckage. So I just think it's an interesting conversation to have. Thank you, Bass Pro 24 Chevy, for allowing us to do that.
Great name as well. I love the names on Reddit. You're like, where did that come from? But
blending a lot of worlds together.
Right? Yeah, yeah. NASCAR. But there's a lot of he had a lot of interests, and he's like, I'm just gonna put them all in one. Yeah. I don't know if Bass Pro 24 was taken, maybe, and he's just like, put Chevy on the end. But no, like it.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
To put a bow real quick on the Williams conversation, I know that I've mentioned in past pods, maybe Liam Lawson being a prime candidate for Logan Sargeant's seat if Williams decides to move on from Sargeant. But Liam Lawson, guys, has kind of ruled out that possibility, correct?
Yeah, it seems so. And we've heard that from kind of the Red Bull side now as well. You know, I asked, is there any chance, thinking maybe, you know, maybe it was something they were considering, but they said, no, absolutely not. You know, we need him in the Red Bull reserve drive. And obviously Williams affiliated to Mercedes. And when Albon went there, I think it was a bit different. He was obviously on a Red Bull deal, but it was very much Red Bull felt quite bad about the way that played out. And I think that they felt they owed Alex something to kind of restart his F1 career. So I think there was a lot of that at play as well. But yeah, so Lawson, as it stands, you know, obviously the crazy world of Formula One, who knows what will open up. But right now, without a seat next year, which is pretty harsh because I think he's done really well.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's hit this badass moment that took place. Aston Martin's Jess Hawkins became the first woman in nearly 5 years to drive a contemporary Formula One car at an event in Budapest this past week. Nate, like, chances like this obviously don't come around often, but with the all-women F1 Academy obviously pushing for moments like this, are events like these going to become more commonplace, you think, in Formula One?
Well, hopefully, but I think it's a tricky situation. And I think you're right that it is rare these days. And in the cost cap era, it's even more difficult for teams to put these on. I think 10, 20 years ago, you probably would have seen more private tests for women, for younger drivers generally. You know, teams would have been able to spend. It's one of the reasons why we see teams lean on their 2021 car, because under the current cost cap, it's easier to do that. Mm-hmm. But I hope so. And I think Formula One is very aware of the fact that this is something they want to see more of. Aston Martin, I mean, Jess Hawkins, she's been affiliated with Aston Martin now for a couple of seasons and has just been waiting and waiting and waiting for this opportunity. You know, we've often seen her in the paddock, and you feel for some of the drivers when they're in that situation, when they're in ambassador roles or they're in, you know, reserve driver roles, because I think it's quite a lonely existence almost when you're at a race, because you are there as a race driver. You know, in Jess Hawkins' case, she's a stunt driver as well. I think she was in some of the James Bond, one of the James Bond films recently. And they're just waiting and waiting for these, you know, these moments or for something to do. And so for her to finally get this opportunity, I think she had 26 laps, is awesome. And I think that kudos for Aston Martin for making it happen. And yeah, you know, I hope it's something that more teams can replicate. I'm not sure if any other teams have many other drivers who are kind of ready for that. Alpine have Abbie Pulling, who's one of the drivers in the academy at the moment. I think she might be somebody who gets a similar opportunity soon. But yeah, hopefully we see more of it. And I think it's one of the drawbacks of the current cost-saving era of Formula One is that it's just so difficult for teams to put on meaningful private tests unless the drivers are willing to pay. And then obviously when you get into the details of it, one of the problems that so many, you know, young women have had in racing is the funding isn't there. So when Lance Stroll came in, for example, with Formula One, he was able, and same with Nikita Mazepin, they were able to pay for lots and lots of private tests on their own back. It's harder for teams to do that, you know, in this era. So I hope we see more of it, but I think that people need to be aware that the kind of the economic constraints mean it's not something that teams can just kind of go out and do every so often. But I think Aston Martin deserve a lot of credit for putting this on.
You're absolutely right, Nate. And I think an interesting note here is Rodin Cars, who promised a female driver, if admitted into Formula One, they've lost their bid to join the grid in the future. Lawrence, can you just remind us of where we stand in terms of entities trying to get on the grid in future years?
Yeah, so the FIA opened up the process earlier this season to try and get potentially 2-3 new teams on the grid. I think we've known for quite some time that Andretti was the most likely candidate to get on there, and it sounds like they have had their bid accepted by the FIA. Whether that then gets accepted by F1 as well and they become a genuine contender on the grid remains to be seen. None of this is official yet, but Rodin Carlin, which was one of the bidders to try and get involved, they currently run cars in F2, F3 through Carlin, right down the motorsport ladder. They've come out and they've said, before the FIA have said, look, we're not in, we've had our bid rejected. I think they're a little bit upset because they were hoping to base their team in New Zealand, so Southern Hemisphere team, which we don't have at the moment in Formula One. I'm not quite sure how that would have worked. I think that would have been quite a tricky thing to accomplish, but it was something they were going for anyway. And they also were hoping to put Jamie Chadwick in the car. Jamie Chadwick, we know, has won the W Series when that was still around. She's, you know, racing the version of what's essentially Indy Lights now. So she's, you know, a very capable racing driver, and they felt that she was in a position to make the step into F1 in one of their cars. But the bid hasn't come together. And really, I think, you know, the FIA do have to be super, super strict on this entry process, make sure everything's in the right place. I mean, yes, it would be great to have a female Formula One driver on the grid, but it's got to be done the right way, and it's got to be with a team that is capable of competing, because otherwise, you know, somebody going around at the back, as we've seen so many times in F1's past with small outfits trying to make it happen, but falling a bit short, you know, it's not actually that great for anyone involved in the team. So, we don't have the details yet as to why the FIA has rejected it exactly. So we'll have to wait for those details. But a number of reports started to surface that Andretti is the only one involved. And from what we understand and what Andretti was saying earlier this year, that will have some involvement from GM as well, which is significant, and the Cadillac brands. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that one ends up and whether they actually make it onto the grid, because there's, as I said, still some steps to go beyond that. But, we know, as we probably assumed going into this process, that the Rodin bid was not successful.
Yeah, and remarkable for Andretti, just at the start of the year, was basically at war with the F1 team. So the fact that he's, you know, that they're putting that proposal forward, I think is quite interesting. I just want to jump back in on quickly just to round off on Hawkins and the test that she had. One of the things that was put forward by Aston Martin as well, which is worth noting, is that as of next season, F1 teams and F1 Academy teams will be very closely joined together. Part of this test was kind of about that, was seeing how that kind of operation might work. From what I understand, that Aston Martin had, you know, a much different crew there than they would have had for an F1 race. And you imagine there'll be people there that maybe work across on the F1 Academy side as well. So I think Formula One deserves a lot of credit for the way it's approached this whole project, because it's not trying to rush things. You know, it's letting teams, you know, put female drivers into the car when they feel it's appropriate. They're not forcing them into it. They're not saying you've got to do this now. From what I hear, and you know, I've been kind of keeping an ear to the ground on this as best I can, I think they're trying to let it grow as organically as possible. And I think that, to exactly what Lawrence was saying there, that is the best way for this to happen. Because if you try and force something, if you just try and put, you know, a team at the back of the grid with a female driver in and she's up against it from the beginning, then, you know, you might as well step 5 or 10 years back, you know, in terms of progress. So encouraging to see. It's also important to say, I think the road in, as Lawrence outlined, the road in bid, I think there was more flaws to the plan than just that they wanted a woman in the car. That wasn't why it was rejected. I think a team going from New Zealand seems pretty optimistic, given the fact that Ferrari can't even get mechanics to move to Italy from the UK. Moving to New Zealand seems quite optimistic.
Yeah, no doubt about it. As always, I appreciate your time and your analysis. Laz, enjoy Northern Japan as you continue to have a little vacay post-Suzuka. You have earned it. We will be back next week for a Qatar race preview. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Hit us with a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you, and we do love podcasts here. Cheers.